All right, I'd like you to take your Bible this morning and turn to Romans chapter 8. When we do it God's way, He wants us to be the head and not the tail. In the next two messages, we're going to talk more about how and the kingdom will be ours once again.
Welcome to Mission to Israel, a broadcast ministry featuring author, teacher, and evangelist Ted R. Weiland. The focus of this ministry is to open the eyes of our people and give insight into the issues we find ourselves facing in this day and age. Our address is Mission to Israel, Post Office Box 248, Scotts Bluff, Nebraska 69363, or you can reach us via the web at www.missiontoisrael.org. And now, here is Ted Weiland.
Okay, take your Bibles and let's turn to the book of Ezra. This will be Ezra, a man stirred by the Spirit, part 2. This will be the second message of our expository series through the book of Ezra. The first message of this series was devoted to better understanding Ezra the man and King Cyrus the man. We looked at him as well, at least to a small degree. We didn't learn a lot about Cyrus, but certainly there was something pertinent to learn about Cyrus. So the first message we're principally dealing with Ezra the man and Cyrus the man, both of whom, if you recall, were stirred in their spirits to advance Yahweh's kingdom here on earth as it is in heaven at that time in history. That's what it was. I don't know that people often think about it, but they were stirred in their spirits to advance the kingdom of heaven on earth as it is in heaven. That prayer, I don't think probably most people take that prayer, that part of Christ's prayer, and go backwards with it, but that's what was occurring. And how encouraging, at least I hope it's encouraging to you, to be able to look back at biblical prophecies already fulfilled and thereby to witness not only Yahweh's faithfulness to His own word and to His people, but also to see how He carried out His sovereign plan. In some instances, even by the hand of those who hate Him, or at least don't know that Cyrus necessarily hated Him, could have. And He certainly has used men and women who have hated Him for His ultimate purposes, or at least men who weren't converted to Him. And thereby, you know, to know that it's the same God who will be faithful to His word to us as well at this time in history, and just simply to us as individuals, to His people collectively, but to you and to me. That it's the same God who, to see how He fulfilled and used whatever it was, an event or a man or men or whatever, to accomplish His purposes, and to know that those prophecies, in this case Jeremiah's prophecies and others, to see those prophecies actually having been fulfilled, and to know that's our God. He is a God who is true to His people and true to His word. And we should not only be encouraged by that fact, but we should be emboldened as well as His people, despite the giants around us today. I mean, He defeated giants all the time. I mean, there isn't a giant. He's the giant. I mean, He's the giant. And all other giant, perceived giants fall at His feet, you know, whether it be Dagon, who lost his head and his hands, you know, or whoever or whatever, inanimate or animate, it makes no difference. So we should be encouraged and emboldened. I hope you were. Last week's message was Ezra the man. From this message forward, we'll be concentrating more on Ezra the book, with a few glimpses, of course, into the man as well. In the last message, we pretty much covered chapter 1. However, before moving on to chapter 2, there is some additional very important information in chapter 1 that needs to be stressed in order to interpret the book correctly, or more precisely, the principles, meaning the principal people of the book correctly, which in turn affects interpreting the book correctly. So we're going to go back to Ezra 1 at least for a while. Hopefully we'll get into chapter 2 here, but let's go back to Ezra chapter 1, beginning with verse 1, or at least part of it. It says, "Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of Yahweh by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, Yahweh stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia." Now we'll stop there. Okay, it says that, he says, this is happening, that the word of Jeremiah, the prophet, might be fulfilled. So we're going to see fulfillment in this book of Jeremiah the prophet. Well, what word? It says that the word of the prophet Jeremiah might be fulfilled. What word of the prophet Jeremiah? Well, let's find out. If you've got a cross-reference there, look there, and it's probably going to tell you Jeremiah chapter 25. So that's where we need to go. Jeremiah chapter 25. By the way, Jeremiah was contemporary with Ezra's grandfather, the high priest Hilkiah. And it's entirely possible that Jeremiah himself was the son of Hilkiah, the high priest, making him, if in fact that was the case, making him one of Ezra's uncles. On the other hand, some believe the priest Hilkiah, Jeremiah's father, was merely another priest of the same name as Hilkiah the high priest, which was Ezra's grandfather. But how interesting. How interesting if Ezra actually was Jeremiah's nephew, who was central to fulfilling at least these prophecies that we're going to look at here in Jeremiah chapter 25. Regardless, Jeremiah was contemporary with Hilkiah, the high priest, Ezra's grandfather, the timing of which helps tie some of this together in a way otherwise not necessarily understood. That is, you know, Jeremiah and Ezra and the connection that there is between the two, and then, of course, the timing involved in all of this as well. And we're going to get here a little bit later, Lord willing, right into the specific timing between Jeremiah's prophecies and this time that we're reading about in Ezra. All right, back to our question from Ezra chapter 1 and verse 1. What word of Jeremiah was fulfilled by Cyrus of Persia? Jeremiah chapter 25, beginning with verse 1 and 2. 25, verses 1 and 2. "The word that came to Jeremiah concerning all the people of Judah in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, that was the first year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, the which Jeremiah the prophet spake unto all the people of Judah and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, saying." Now we're going to stop there momentarily. Let's begin by noting to whom these prophecies that we're going to be reading here pertained. To whom these prophecies pertained. Well, it says it. It tells us. It says to Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Jerusalem, the capital of the house of Judah. And who exactly are these people or those people so identified? Who exactly are those people so identified? Did these Judahites, or Jews as they are rendered in our English versions and usually identified by modern Christianity, at the time of Jeremiah's prophecy, represent all 12 tribes of Israel as they are usually? That is the Jews. That is as they are usually represented by most contemporary Christians, preachers, and laymen alike? Is that who these Judah and the Jerusalem, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, represented? No, not at all. Now, I think if I were to ask the vast majority of Christians today, they'd probably say yes, because it's so common that there's this interchange of Jews being all 12 tribes of Israel. But you all know, and many of the people that receive these CDs know, but then a lot don't. No, not at all. At this point in the nation of Israel's narrative, the United House of Israel, the United House of Israel, consisting of all 12 tribes, had been divided already into two separate and distinct and often warring houses. The House of Israel, consisting of the ten northern tribes of Israel, with its individual members known as Israelites. They were the house of Israel, and therefore the individual members were known as Israelites, but never, 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 never as Jews or Judahites. And the house of Judah, consisting of the two southern tribes of Judah and Benjamin, with Judah as the principal tribe, and therefore their individual members of the house of Judah, principally known and identified as Jews, or better, Judahites. After all, they were citizens not of the house of Jew, they were the citizens of the house of Judah. Citizens of the house of Israel were known as Israelites, therefore citizens of the house of Judah are better rendered Judahites rather than merely Jews. And if for no other reason than to keep them distinct from today's imposters, which is another series all in itself, as you know. However, not to be overlooked, being they were, speaking of the two tribes of the house of Judah, being that they were lineal descendants of two of the 12 tribes of Israel, they were sometimes also identified as Israelites, which can sometimes prove to be challenging. That is, keeping them distinguished from the citizens of the house of Israel, who were known also known as Israelites, which, just like the Hebrew word goyim and the Greek word ethne and the English word Gentiles, makes contextual identification imperative. We've got to, because we've got two groups of Israelites that are not necessarily one and the same in all places, we've got to use the context to determine which Israelites of the two houses we're actually speaking to. Now, it's extremely important that we understand that only citizens of the house of Judah are ever identified by both terms, Israelites and Judahites or Jews, in the Bible. Only the two tribes of the house of Israel, the two tribes of Judah, Judah and Benjamin. Failing to make this distinction has been the cause for a number of compounded theological errors, including one that's often made with the book of Ezra, with repercussions carried over into the New Testament. In fact, as is so often the case, the Lord will give me messages to preach, and separate from that, my other duties end up involving the very same thing. And I've been addressing this very error since just Thursday in the discussion regarding my blog article, Swallowing Camels, Part 3. So it's right here again. We've been dealing with that very issue. And it is a huge issue, because the vast majority of Christianity, having made that mistake, not distinguishing between the house of Judah and the house of Israel, and that only the house of Judah can be identified as both Judahites, Jews, or Israelites, has caused this problem. And again, I'm dealing with it right now again. That said, any time we find references to Jews or Judahites in the Bible, Old or New Testament alike, we immediately know, or should know, need to know, that the passage is referring to and only to the descendants of the two-tribed house of Judah, as here in Jeremiah chapter 25. So, with that understood, let's go back, reread those first verses, and let's read through verse 12. Verse 1 again, "The word that came to Jeremiah concerning all the people of Judah in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, that was the first year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, the which Jeremiah the prophet spake unto all the people of Judah and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, saying, From the 13th year of Josiah, the son of Amon, king of Judah, even unto this day, that is the 23rd year, the word of Yahweh has come unto me, and I have spoken unto you, rising early and speaking, but ye have not hearkened." This is the context, the lack of obedience and servant and recognition in serving Yahweh as God. He says, but you have not hearkened, and Yahweh has sent unto you all his servants the prophets, rising early and sending them, but you have not hearkened and inclined your ear to hear. They said, turn ye again now, every one from his evil way, and from the evil of your doings, and dwell in the land that Yahweh has given unto you and to your fathers forever and ever. Obey me, and it's yours forever. And go not after other gods, to serve them and to worship them, and provoke me not to anger with the works of your hands, and I will do you no hurt. Yet ye have not hearkened unto me, saith Yahweh, that you might provoke me to anger with the works of your hands to your own hurt. Therefore thus saith Yahweh of hosts, because you have not heard my words, behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, saith Yahweh, and Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and will bring them against this land, and against the inhabitants thereof, and against all the nations round about, and will utterly destroy them, and make them an astonishment and a hissing and perpetual desolations. Moreover, I will take from them the voice of mirth, the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom, the voice of the bride, the sound of the millstones and the light of the candle. And this whole land shall be a desolation and an astonishment, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. Verse 12, and it shall come to pass when the 70 years are accomplished, that I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, saith Yahweh, for their iniquity, and the land of the Chaldeans, and will make it a perpetual desolation. And we'll stop there. And in so doing, with that prophecy, after the 70 years, the implication is that those nations to whom God is referring to here would be released from that particular captivity. All right, and verse 11 speaks of those nations. And this whole land shall be a desolation and an astonishment, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. Well, what nations? What nations? Verses 1 and 2, the house of Judah, consisting of the two southern tribes or nations of Judah and Benjamin. Furthermore, it couldn't have been the 10-tribed house of Israel. You know, people see Jews and they think, or Judah, and they think all Israel. Well, it couldn't have been the 10-tribed house of Israel if for no other reason than they had been taken into Assyrian captivity some 80 years prior to when Jeremiah declared these prophecies, and approximately 140 years prior to when this prophecy would realize its fulfillment at the time of Ezra and Nehemiah. Moreover, the house of Israel's captivity, the house of Israel's, the 10 northern tribes, captivity and dispersion was never prophesied to suddenly end at the same time Judah's did. They were to continue in their dispersion long beyond the time that the 70 years for Judah ended, and so forth. So there is no way that you can read the house of Israel into the nations that Jeremiah here is referring to. No, it was clearly the house of Judah that Jeremiah prophesied was to be taken into Babylonian captivity, and it was likewise the house of Judah that Jeremiah prophesied would be released after 70 years, and which are the words of Jeremiah referred to in Ezra chapter 1. Now, I don't know of any Bible commentaries, encyclopedias, or dictionaries that disagree with what I just related to you. And yet, somehow, later in Ezra, as we will see, there's a disconnect by some people from these indisputable facts that I just shared with you, and who somehow conclude that the Israel, later mentioned in the book of Ezra, beginning in chapter 2 and throughout Ezra and Nehemiah as well, they somehow disconnect from these facts and believe that the Israel that's then the Israel that's then mentioned throughout these books, Ezra and Nehemiah, represent all 12 tribes instead of only the two-tribed house of Judah, who went into Babylonian captivity and who were released from that same captivity 70 years later, at the time of King Cyrus of Persia in the book of Israel, all in accordance with the word of Jeremiah, who, according to the word of Jeremiah, could only be Judahite Israelites. Or Jeremiah is a false prophet, and so is the one who inspired his prophecies. Now, with that said, could there have been a smattering of Israelites from some of the 10 tribes who returned with the house of Judah at this time? Sure. And I'm confident there probably, in fact, were some. There seems to be some pretty good viable evidence to that likelihood. Nevertheless, a presence of a few 10-tribed Israelites among the returning 2-tribed house of Judah is immaterial to the fact that Jeremiah's prophecies concerning the 2-tribed house of Judah, not the 10-tribed house of Israel, still in dispersion. And neither did had no bearing on that. And neither did a smattering, by the way, of the 10-tribed any 10-tribed Israelites among the house of Judah make those 10-tribed Israelites in dispersion Jews or Judahites, or even the ones with the house of Judah, any more than did the Levites who were among them, or a smattering of non-Israelite slaves among them, whether Canaanites or Philistines or whatever. Their presence with the Judahites did not make such people Judahites. You can't turn them into any Canaanite slaves they may have had suddenly into Judahites because they're there present with the Judahites after the dispersion. Nobody would try to do that, and yet they try to do it with what appears to be a smattering of 10-tribed Israel along with the house of Judah. Can't be done. We'll see here shortly that pedigrees were very important, for example, to the Levites. And then in later chapters, we'll see that it was the same with the Judahites as well. Now, Lord willing, I will address the mistake that's made in this regard more specifically later chapters. But in the meantime, I wanted you to know about this ahead of time so that every time I point out where the text, and I will do it every time that the term Israel comes up, so that every time when I point out where the text proves it's talking about Judahite Israelites, not all 12 tribes of Israel, but Judahite Israelites, you'll know why I'm doing so. Such as with the last verse of chapter 1 and the first verse of chapter 2. So let's look at those. Back to Ezra. Okay, back to Ezra, chapter 1, verse 11, and chapter 2, verse 1. Watch what happens here. All the vessels of the gold and silver were 5,400. All these did Sheshbazzar bring up with them of the captivity that were brought up from Babylon unto Jerusalem. Gets even more specific in the next verse. Now these are the children of the province that went up out of the captivity of those which had been carried away, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away into Babylon and came again unto Jerusalem and Judah, every one to his city. Let me ask you, who had been carried away into Babylon with Nebuchadnezzar? Not the 10-tribed house of Israel. They'd already been in captivity for 140 years by the hands of the Assyrians. He's very specific here. He says those who had been carried away captivity were those now that were returning from the captivity. Who was it? Well, not the 10-tribed house of Israel, but the 2-tribed southern house of Judah. Not all 12 tribes, but as maintained by some people later on in the book of Ezra, but only the 2 tribes of Judah and Benjamin. Look at Ezra 2 and verse 1 again. It says, "Now these are the children of the province that went up out of the captivity of those which had been carried away when Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away unto Babylon, and came again unto Jerusalem and Judah, every one to his city." Who did Nebuchadnezzar carry away into captivity of Babylon? The two tribed house of Judah. More precisely, we're going to narrow this down even more. More precisely, only a remnant, in fact, of the two tribes of Judah and Benjamin, because the majority of the house of Judah had actually been taken captive along with the house of Israel by the Assyrians. And it was only a remnant of the remnant that was taken captive by the Babylonians who returned with Ezra and Nehemiah. Talk about making it impossible for all 12 tribes to have returned. It's only a remnant of the remnant of the tribes of Judah and Benjamin to begin with, that returned from that Babylonian captivity, which we'll discuss in more detail when we get to verse 64 of this chapter. In the meantime, let's start working our way now through chapter 2, most of which consists of names of those who returned with Ezra and Nehemiah. And by the way, the list, much the same like the first three verses of Ezra are the same as the last three verses of 2 Chronicles. What we find in Ezra chapter 1, verses 1 through 70, these list of names are essentially one and the same as found in Nehemiah 7, 6 through 73. Now, we're not going to take the time to read all of the names listed between verses 2 and 61 of Ezra chapter 2, let alone try to pronounce them. I'll leave that to you to do on your own, especially the pronouncing part. But however, amongst all of these names, and there's lots of them here, there are some things that we do want to highlight. So back to Ezra chapter 2. And beginning with verse 1 again. "Now these are the children of the province that went up out of the captivity of those which had been carried away, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away into Babylon, and came again unto Jerusalem and Judah, every one to his city, which came with Zerubbabel, Jeshua, Nehemiah," there's Nehemiah, "Seraiah, Mordecai, that name should ring a bell, which helps place the timing of the events of the book of Esther. Obviously, they were contemporary here to some degree. Obviously, Esther, what takes place in Esther would have taken place before this, but because Mordecai at some point appears to be come back with those that had been under the Babylonian captivity. Okay, continuing, back to verse 2 again. "Which came with Zerubbabel, Jeshua, Nehemiah, Seraiah, Reelaiah, Mordecai, Bilshan, Mispar, Bigvai, Rehum, and Baana." And that's enough of trying to pronounce these names. "The number of the men of the people of Israel." Didn't take long, did it? I thought you said that we're only talking about Judahites here in Ezra. And yet, here it already mentions Israelites, or more precisely, the people of Israel. Indeed. What's the problem? What's the problem? Israelites. They were Israelites. Judahite Israelites, or more precisely, the people of Israel from the house of Judah. Remember that as citizens of the house of Judah, they were known as Judahites. And as descendants of the two tribes of the 12 tribes of Israel, they were also known as Israel or Israelites. But never, 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 never are the citizens of the house of Israel known as Jews, or more properly as Judahites. Why? And again, I know you guys know this, but there's a lot of people who need to have this drilled into them because they've been told the opposite all the time. Why? Because none of them are descended from the tribe of Judah or were citizens of the house of Judah. And therefore, why would you call them Judahites? They weren't from Judah. in any sense of the word. They were just merely Israelites. Okay, for another hiccup, jump down to verses 36 through 40. Verse 36, the priests, the children of Jedidiah of the house of Jeshua, 973. The children of Immer, 1,052. The children of Pasher, 1,247. The children of Harim, 1,017. Verse 40, the Levites, the children of Jeshua and Kadmiel, and the children of Hodavah, 74. I thought you said that we're only talking about Judahites here. Well, the priests and the Levites, who although genetically were one of the 12 tribes, the Levites that is, were one of the 12 tribes of Israel because they had been given special duties and privileges, technically were not considered a tribe, but were nonetheless numbered with the house of Judah. Now, Judah was only Judah and Benjamin, but we've got the Levites now involved as well. Why were they numbered with the house of Judah? Because when the split occurred between the house of Judah and the house of Israel, the Levites and the priests remained not with the house of Israel, but with the house of Judah. For the most part, I'm sure there were some that probably were otherwise, but the vast majority of the Levites, and particularly the priests, remained with the house of Judah. If you remember, after Jeroboam split the kingdom and took off with the 10 tribes of Israel, he set up false priests of the 10 tribes rather than having the Levites. The Levites had stayed behind, so he didn't have Levites. He had to have his priesthood, so he set up false priests of different tribes. So the Levites stayed with the house of Judah and therefore went with the house of Judah into captivity and returned with the house of Judah from the Babylonian captivity, and are therefore enumerated here in Ezra and in Nehemiah with the house of Judah. Now, somewhat of a hiccup, but pretty easily explained when you understand the history of what took place. All right, jump down to verse 43. Verse 43, the Nethinims, the children of Zeba, and so forth and so on. Nethinims? What are Nethinims, as per the King James Version? Well, per New American Standard Bible and other versions, other more modern versions, the Nethinims, you won't find Nethinims in those versions. Instead, you'll find it translated as the temple servants. They were temple servants to the priest, probably slaves, is probably more accurate. So that's who the Nethinims are, in case you'd be going through here and wondering. All right, jump down to verses 58 through 59. And these were they which went up from Telmela and Telharsa, Cherub, Adan, and Immer. But they could not show their father's house and their seed whether they were of Israel. And the I started in verse 59. One started with verse 58. All the Nethinims and the children of Solomon's servants. So that's who's being identified here in particular. All the Nethinims and the children of Solomon's servants were 392, and these were they which went up from the different places and could not show their father's houses and their seed whether they were of Israel. That is, of either Judah or Benjamin, the Levites, of course, would have been included as well. With that in mind, continuing, verse 59, continuing, and these were they which went up from these different places, but they could not show their father's house and their seed whether they were of Israel. The children of Deliah, the children of Tobiah, the children of Nakoda, 652. And of the children of the priests, the children of Habeah, the children of Kaz, the children of Barzillai, which took a wife of the daughters of Barzillai, the Gileadite, and was called after their name. These thought, verse 62, these sought their register among those who were reckoned by genealogy, but they were not found. Therefore, they as polluted, therefore were they as polluted, put from the priesthood. And the Tirshatha said unto them that they should not eat of the most holy things till there stood up a priest with Urim and Thummim. which would appear to be that was going to be the means to determine whether, without their genealogical records, they actually were of the Levites or the priesthood. When it came to the priesthood and the Levites, there is no question that pedigree made a difference. In other words, to serve as a priest or a Levite in temple duties, you had to prove Levite extraction. And then later in Ezra, we'll see that the same, once again, is true for the Judahites as well. All right. Again, just trying to highlight some of the things that need to be done here. Let's jump down to verse 64 and 65. The whole congregation together was 42,000. So after all these lists, the Nethinims and the temple servants and the Levites and the priests and the Judahites, all of these different lists that we skipped over here, we get to verse 64 and it says, the whole congregation together, all of those lists together, was 42,303 beside their servants and their maids, of whom there were 7,337, and there were among them 200 singing men and singing women. Now, this is a good place to stop, if for no other reason than because what needs to be said about these two verses is going to likely, in fact, I know it will take more time than what we've got left for this message. However, I wanted to read them to you in order to give you an assignment for the next message. See if you can't come up with the answer here regarding the number of returnees provided us in verse 64. The relatively, which may be overlooked at first, the relatively small, in fact, tiny number as compared to the number of Israelites in toto in dispersion at the time. Only 42,360. Now that may seem like a large number, but not in comparison to the estimated number of Israelites, Judahites and Israelites alike, in dispersion at the time. It's a tiny, tiny number. 42,360 Judahites, Levites, and servants who returned with Ezra and Nehemiah from the Babylonian captivity. Now, people often wonder, let me add this, people often wonder, why did God put all of these genealogies and numbers in the Bible? You know, you're just reading them, just going through them, it's like, this is just boredom. You know, all these names that I can't even pronounce. All these numbers of these names and these people, all of these lists, and there's, you know, relatively a small number of those kinds of things in the Bible as a whole, but when you're actually bogged down on them, they seem just overbearing in a sense. And so people often wonder, why did God put all of these genealogies and numbers in His Word? Well, He didn't tell us His reasons. Did you notice that? He didn't tell us His reason. Consequently, we can't be sure, can we? Nevertheless, I can tell you this regarding this number, and who knows what other interesting things are there may be regarding these other numbers that are found in the Scriptures and other names that are found in the Scriptures. But I can tell you this about this number, which I'm sure probably most readers usually just pass over as if it's unimportant. But I can tell you this, that it has significant theological implications. So, give it some thought and see if you can't figure out why 42,360 returnees is a very significant number in the Bible, in particularly the book of Ezra. Okay, let's close this one in prayer. Heavenly Father, we come before You, Lord, thankful, Father, once again for Your Word, and Your Word in its entirety, all the list, all the numbers, all of it's from You. Lord, You've purified it seven times over, Lord. As we're told, it's all important for whatever reason. And we're just thankful for it and ask that, Father, as we go through this book, that You'd give us a better understanding not only of it, but how it ties in with so many other things, Father, in Your Word. This is such a key book, even as it concerns what we find in the New Testament. And just ask for Your understanding and that we would apply it correctly and use it in discerning other parts of Your book so that we can apply them correctly as well. We turn this series over to you, Lord, as always, to your praise and glory, for the sake of your kingdom and the advancement of your and understanding of your people in regards to it. Glory be to you, and we ask these things in Yeshua the Christ. Amen.